Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
Good day, Mr. Rushforth, Mr. Napolitano.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good to see everybody here.
Yeah, I wish we were.
What a beautiful day.
Shorts and flip-flops here. How about you, boys?
Yep.
Same.
Isn't this sweet?
So, Frankie.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Frankie, unbelievable. For April 10th, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Frankie, I'm not sure if Steve shared the news with you or not, but today is our 695th show.
Look at that.
Shouldn't
Look
we?
At you guys keep in track.
We should be much better.
We really
should be a lot better than we are.
Yeah. But you know what? I look back at all the 695 shows, and all I could think about was how often did I have to really buy breakfast for this guy? My God.
195, Paul. 195 at best. And I'm being generous.
Yeah.
At 195.
Well, you haven't had to buy in 55 weeks.
55 I know. Weeks. Crazy. I know. Crazy.
That number's going to go up. I don't imagine. I don't know, Steve. I don't know. They haven't said anything to us, but I don't know when we're going to be back in the studio.
I think once we're all vaccinated would be my guess.
I'm thinking 2022. It's feeling like it's going to be 2022.
And given we're all so young, it could be a while.
Wow. Yeah. Let's hope to see you again, Steve. You never know. You might be in your 70s before we see you again.
Just a bit has changed, eh, in that 55 weeks. Not much.
Yeah, just a little, huh? Boy,
yeah.
Including this last month, the numbers are out, huh, Paul?
Oh, numbers are out, and they're absolutely insane. You know, after I tell you about the numbers, I will tell you what I'm seeing in the real estate market going forward. But, you know, just March alone, March over March, number of sales was up 50.9%.
Wow.
And the average sale price was up 31%. The average sale price in March was just over $677,000. And when you look at year to date, number of sales is up 35%, and the average sale price is up 28.8%. Our average sale price year to date right now is $646,000. Keep in mind, 3 months ago, it was at $529,000. So we're up about $17,000, $18,000, $19,000 in 3 months on the average sale price, which
and that,
is crazy.
That's residential and condos, right?
Residential and condos.
It's even higher for residential, isn't it?
Well, when you look at residential, so condos are only up 16.9%, but residential is up 32.2%. So the average sale price at the end of March last year was $552,000. Right now, $729,000. It's absolutely insane what's going on in the Ottawa real estate market. Saying that, our listings are starting to pour on the market right now, and we're seeing a bit of a shift in the market right now, and it's trying to educate those sellers about what's going on, because the sellers are still trying to hit these home runs. But I feel like we are in for a little bit of a slowdown. When I say slowdown, it's just not going to be as insane as it is, because we just have too many houses on the market. I mean, they're starting to flood on the market, which is great for buyers, but it's, you know, but sellers need to realize that, you know, those home runs that everyone was hitting, and there's certain pockets that are still hitting home runs, but in majority of Ottawa right now is going to have a little bit of a shift to, you know, maybe not selling for 150 over asking price, maybe selling for less than that. So sellers, be prepared for a little bit of a shift. Saying that, in the month of March, 80% of all homes were sold over asking price, 6% were sold at list price, and 14% were sold under list price. So I think those numbers are going to shift a little bit as we get into April and May. But when the numbers come out in April and May, they're going to look crazy because of what went on in last year at that time frame. I mean, last April, we were down number of sales 55%.
Yeah.
You know, May, we were down 44%. You know, June, 2.1%. It wasn't until July that we kind of came out of this, the shock of the pandemic, and we were up number of sales 19.1%. So I think over the next 2 or 3 months, when I talk about the numbers, they're going to seem a lot crazier than they are, but I think the market is starting to stabilize a little bit more as we go forward.
You both think we've peaked now for prices?
No.
No?
No, we haven't peaked. I don't think we've peaked for prices at all, actually. I think, listen, economics 101, supply and demand, supply and demand, supply and demand. And, you know, and I think we'll talk about the stress test change that's happened or that's potentially going to happen. At this point, it's just a proposal. I saw a number of mortgage brokers yesterday, putting it out there like it's already a done deal. It's not a done deal. It's likely going to be a done deal, but it's a minor change to a stress test where, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So if you're buying a house with 20% down or more, or refinancing with, and you can only refinance if you have 20% unless you're going through separation, the qualifying rate is jumping from 4.79 to 5.25. So,
but that's a lot. That's not a small change.
Well, again, it's with 20% down only, so anybody buying a house with less than 20% down, so this is not impacting the first-time home buyers because they'll still qualify at what we think is still an inflated interest rate of 4.79. But nonetheless, I mean, this is OSFI's way of, they think, of cooling the real estate market a little bit. And personally, I mean, this is going to make a 2 or 3% difference in buying power. So not that much. It's nothing like the stress test, Paul and Steve, in 2016, where the clients went from qualifying at the rate that they were getting, which at the time was 2.5%, to 5.19 when it first came out. So that's a big difference. That really impacted the buying power by 20, 25, 30%. Now we're talking 2, 3, or 4%, depending on which market you're in. So very minuscule. And again, it doesn't go into effect until, if it gets passed, because at this point it's just a proposal, doesn't go into effect until June 1st. So if anything, what we might see, because again, consumers are confused and are not sure of how this works, and even real estate agents, one that I spoke with this morning, thought that because they had a purchase agreement with the closing date of the end of June, that they would have to qualify on the new stress test. And the fact is that as long as the application goes in by May 31st, you qualify at the old rules. Only if the application goes in June 1st or after will the new rate take the new qualifying take effect.
Do you think any of these changes are really necessary, or will the market correct itself?
No, I think what's necessary is supply and demand, then supply and demand, supply and demand. The government needs to get their head out of you know what and look at it and say, okay, we're going to open up the floodgates to immigration. We already have a supply and demand issue right now. So what's going to happen if you start allowing 200, 300,000 people to come to Canada, which they have to? Where are they going to live? We have a supply and demand issue, not only in Ottawa. We're not talking about Ottawa. We're talking about Canada. That's why the real estate market is doing what it's doing right now, because there isn't enough supply for the demand that's out there.
And then saying that, Frank, you know, when Steve asked you the question, do you think the prices are going to plateau? And you said, no, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to plateau. I don't think they're going to go as, you know, as quick and hard as they have been going. But, you know, I track the active listings all the time to see where we're at. And, you know, we've been hovering around, well, for the longest time, we couldn't even get over 1,000. We finally, over the last month, got over 1,000, where we're at about 1,100, 1,200 at the highest. I looked this morning, there's actually 1,425 active homes on the market, which is the most we've had all year, and it's jumped up a huge chunk. So, I mean, that goes to show you that we are getting a little bit more supply on the market. You know, we had a couple scenarios this week where we actually reduced the prices of homes.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's funny. One of my agents jokingly sent out an email and said, does anyone remember the language on how to reduce homes? We haven't had to do it in so long, but... No, I mean, like if you're, you know, I look at the certain pockets of the city. I mean, the west and the south is still selling a little bit. It's selling at the strongest point. I think the east is a little bit more listing heavy right now. I mean, when I look at, you know, townhomes in Orleans, they're up really high. Single family homes, same thing. But there's certain pockets that are selling a little bit quicker than others. But I actually think it's a good thing that more listings are hitting the market. There's less frustration out there. Buyers have a little more choice. Yes, have some sellers sort of missed that grand slam of January, February, and maybe early March? Yeah, they have. But I still predict the prices to go up, and homes are still selling over asking. I mean, we looked at March, 86% sold at either list price or more. So that's a huge chunk of homes that are selling.
If you're going year to year, it's going to be a grand slam either way.
It is. I mean, we're already way ahead of where we were in 2020. And I went back this week, and I looked at the number of listings on the market at the end of March, and I think it was 1,188 was the active number at the end of March. And then I went back to last March, and there was about, you know, 1,000 or 1,200 more. So we were pretty listing starved last year, too. And then I went back to 2019, 18, 17, and 16. In 2016, there was almost 9,000 homes on the market at the end of March. So we have, over the years, drastically dropped the number of listings that are actually on the market. And Frank is right. We have a supply and demand issue right now. but it's encouraging to see more listings hit the market.
Wow, we haven't been over 1,400 in easily over a year.
Oh, God, yes. It's, when I looked at it, I was like, I'm going to refresh that. I think that might be a mistake.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, that must be a mistake. But, you know, even over the last 7 days, there's been 785 listings hit the market. You know, in January and February, we were talking about 200 max that were hitting the market in that period. Well, now there's almost 800 homes that are hitting the market. And I looked at the Orleans, the Barrhaven, the Kanata area, which I always do, and there's 2,263 active listings in that area and only 55 rentals. So, you know, I talked a little while about it, but if you're in the rental game, you're laughing because there's tons of rentals on the market. Well, in all of Orleans, there's only 8 rentals right now in the market where there used to be way more than that. So now the market has even shifted on the rental market, where you're actually in bidding wars on the rental market. So it's such a fluid market that every week we're talking about a different strategy and things are changing so quick.
Hey, Frank, just before we go to break, am I in trouble?
Uh-oh, why?
I don't know. You have a lawyer calling in. I thought maybe I did something wrong.
You know what? I wanted Michael to call in and to get, I mean, we talk about the mortgage perspective, we talk about the real estate. I'm interested to hear what's happening on the lawyer side with everything that's happening.
Yep.
Who is it, Michael Abrams?
It is.
Yeah. Awesome, he's the best.
We will be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, and joined by Kelly Santini, real estate lawyer extraordinaire, Mike Abrams. Mike, shorts and flip-flops today?
Absolutely, but I'm one of those crazy guys that do that in the winter as well. So that's not saying much, but today it's more apropos.
So how's the past year been for the real estate lawyer brand? Has it changed at all?
Yes, it has changed. It has... You know, probably much like Frank and Paul see, everything's harder and there's less time to do it in. So that's the reality of the situation we've been dealing with. I was joking with a couple colleagues yesterday that I don't think anybody had predicted at this time last year that this is where we'd be. I mean, we had, you know, emergency partnership meetings to discuss how we were going to triage and manage our way through the pandemic, and, you know, the utmost goal was to, you know, maintain staff and not have to deal with any of those negatives. But thankfully, I mean, you know, it's been very, very busy, which is a problem, but it's a great problem to have.
I'll bet you've never been this busy.
Our team, everybody is firing on all cylinders, with people still working remotely because we're essential. We are permitted in the office, and some of us are there, but a lot of people are still working from home. You know, that fluidity that you're used to of just being able to walk down to someone's desk and get an answer, it isn't there, and it makes things tricky. And we're seeing that not only in our office, and I'm sure Frank can speak to this, but when you're dealing with lenders as well, you're seeing that because primarily most of, you know, the back office, as they call it, the people that are actually kind of managing and funding the mortgages for a lot of these purchases are working remotely. And because their volumes are also at levels they've never seen, things are taking longer.
Michael, let me ask you a question. What is your, obviously, with so many homes now going over asking price and going firm, has your message to your clients changed at all about, you know, having to go firm and, you know, what happens if they move into the house and there are issues? Obviously, you're having to educate them a lot more because of that.
Yeah, and, I mean, we're also realistic that obviously in a perfect world from, you know, me as the, you know, paranoid lawyer perspective, you would never buy a property firm, much less in the winter like we were doing. But the reality of it is if someone wanted a house, there was no appetite for a conditional offer, so you have to be realistic with people to tell them, from a legal perspective, I can't advise you to do this, but I understand, practically speaking, you're going to do it anyways, and here are the steps you can take to at least attempt to mitigate some of the concerns. But that rainstorm we had, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, you know, the amount of calls I got after about basement flooding. You know, and the unfortunate part, right, is that not that an inspection is going to catch everything, but when you're going in firm, you know, the main contractual tenant still remains buyer beware, caveat emptor.
Well, we're actually seeing, Michael, that a good chunk of people, and well, most people, are even going firm on country properties with well and septic, and that's where it becomes very risky.
That's a little scary.
I was just going to mention that because that is exceptionally scary for a number of reasons, but one of them, and a lot of times, you know, the listing agent will provide a water potability or something, but at the same time, as Frank knows, a lender needs to see that there's good water before they will even fund on a purchase. And I've seen situations where people have gone firm. The lender has said, that's great that the seller did one. We want one that you or your agent does because we don't know the seller. We don't have a relationship with them. We want you to do it. And they do it, and the results aren't satisfactory to the lender.
In a situation like that, Mike, don't they usually want two or three over a period of time?
Depending on the length. I mean, right now when you're looking at the length of the closings being reduced so much, you're not seeing as much of that. But over an extended period, let's say if you had a 4 to 6 month closing, then absolutely they would. But, you know, Paul, we're even seeing cottage properties selling in the winter with no conditions. And as you know, when you're buying a cottage, you're buying the water, right? You're buying the waterfront. And people are buying it without even being able to look at the waterfront.
Wow.
Yeah. Which, again, you know, God bless them. I personally wouldn't do that, but I understand why people would, because there was just that surge, and that was the direction the market went. And if you wanted to get into the market, you know, those are the rules of the game at present, and if you want in, that's what you're going to have to do.
For sure. Yeah, I was actually helping one of my agents this week with a cottage property, and they, in order to get it, it was well and septic. They had to go in firm in order to get it, and
wow.
I said, you know, how old is the septic? They said, well, it's about 27 years old. And I said, okay, tell your buyers if they're going in firm, they better be budgeting $30,000 approximately for a new septic, because most likely 100%. That's what they're going to have to do.
Mike, what can people expect as a reasonable turnaround time?
Well, it's, you know, if in a perfect world, you know, 6 weeks, I'd say, is reasonable and still kind of on the quick end. I mean, we're seeing them come in, you know, 3 weeks or so, and the advice I give, you know, to realtors, to clients, to everyone, is this is pretty much one of the most expensive transactions you will do in your lifetime. Is doing it as quickly as humanly possible sound like the best way to go about it?
Yeah, good point.
Well,
but again, like Paul can mention, when you're in an extreme seller's market, a lot of times if you're a buyer agent submitting an offer, you're leaving the closing date blank and the seller's filling it in. And
that's
because
exactly,
the seller's getting to determine
exactly
that.
What's happening. Yeah, if you want to know when the closing date is, it's whenever the seller decides it is. That's the truth.
Do you see this continuing now over the next few months?
I mean, I think from, you know, to go back to Paul's comments about there becoming more inventory on the market, hopefully that's going to swing, you know, the pendulum a little bit back towards, you know, if not a balanced market, at least a reasonably seller's market instead of what I would call the extreme seller's market we've seen over the last year. But the risk, just to get back quickly to talk about the short closing times, and Frank can speak to this as well, lenders are taking longer to do things and having less time to do it. And when I say do things, everything. You know, so most times when we're getting money from a lender, it's getting wired to us. Now, on a busy closing day, and I always laugh with Paul and people in his profession, that realtors have these weird obsessions with certain days of the month, the 15th, the 30th, and I always counsel, avoid them. Pick a random day like the 11th or the 23rd or something like that, because the volumes are going to be less, and therefore the bank that's processing it, instead of them maybe having 33,000 wires they have to process, they only have 11 or 9,000, and it just means, there's no guarantee, but it eliminates a potential likelihood of there being delays with things. Similarly, just for banks to review things about what's required to provide, it's taking them. So clients have to be flexible. I mean, we always occasionally will get transactions and a client will call me and say, hey, we just agreed to buy a house and the closing day, we're going to be gone for the week before and the week before. That's not a problem, is it?
Hey, just before we let you go, Mike, the old rule still applies, right? Buy and sell and close on the same day, right?
No. You just gave me a shiver. No. Do it. I always say, you know what? Do it civilized. Do it like, you know, the king and queen would move. They would take their time, you know?
Exactly.
So Frank can tell you, bridge financing is, in comparison to the stress and other costs you're going to incur, so cheap. So
yep.
That you can
Agreed.
Take a week, two
Agreed.
Weeks, and do it. And I know people that have done it. What they do is they literally do a room a day.
Yeah.
So by the time they're done, there are no boxes left over like most of us are used to when you're done moving, things like that. And also under the current pandemic situation and the stay-at-home order, when you're moving, unfortunately, you can't have your buddies over to help you and, you know, you bribe them with beer and pizza. So trying now to do it yourself without the help of friends because logistically you can't right now, that is just going to be such a slog that I certainly wouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, thanks for joining us, Mike.
Anytime, fellas. Have a great day.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
521-TALK, 521-8255. Back with Paul Rushforth and Frank Napolitano. I was kidding with Mike about buying, selling, and closing on the same day, but are you guys still seeing that?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Rarely.
Yeah.
Rare.
Yeah.
Very rare.
Yeah, you can't do that. You have to mitigate the risk of something happening with your closing.
I mean, sure.
If you purchase your new house and you're closing on a Thursday and something goes wrong and you have to wait till Friday or potentially Monday to rectify the problem. And, you know, he talked about closing dates too, and he's entirely right. Like, people like to close on that Friday so they get their keys on that Friday and they're able to, you know, get into the new house for the weekend, but it's probably the worst date to close. Like, you're better to close on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday than you are on a Friday because it's very popular and you risk something going wrong on that day.
And further away from the beginning and the end of the month, right?
Yeah, it's
100%. And I agree with you, Paul. I always say to clients, try to close on a Wednesday, Thursday, so if something were to go wrong, you're still in there for the weekend because the weekend's the big time that you want to get in and do things. And when it comes to bridge financing, I always say if you want it to be minimal, fine. Close on a Wednesday, Thursday on the purchase. Close on a Tuesday, Wednesday the following week on a sale so that you give yourself a couple of days before the weekend. You got the whole weekend, and then you got a day or two to clean it up before you can give up the keys.
We're not talking about a lot of money, though, are we, Frank, for bridge financing?
No. No, bridge financing itself is inexpensive because bridge financing itself is just a loan on the down payment, on the equity that you've got built in your existing home. What is a little bit more expensive, and everybody asks me how expensive bridge financing, I say, well, that's the inexpensive part of it. The expensive part is the fact that you own two homes for those 4, 5, 6 days, and therefore you've got two mortgage payments, because technically, even if you ported your mortgage over, technically the bank will put you in an open mortgage on the house that you sold until your closing date. So you're carrying two mortgages, two property taxes, two utilities, two maintenances, two insurances. That's the expensive part. The bridge loan in itself is not very expensive.
You know, one thing I want to say about Michael Abrams, I think I've said it before. Thanks for bringing him on, Frank, because it's always great to get a different perspective. But
it really is.
One year, Paul Rushforth Real Estate, my company, was doing a blood drive. And I actually had the pleasure of meeting a gentleman who was Michael Abrams' dad, who was donating, and the number is going to be wrong, but at the time, he had donated over 700 times or something like that, and I was blown away, because you can only donate every, 6 weeks, 8 weeks or something, you can only donate, maybe even it's longer, I don't know, but he had donated almost 700 or over 700 times at that one point. I was blown away just meeting his dad. What a wonderful man he was.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, so the last few weeks, I don't think I've ever read as much about cooling a real estate market and people coming up with so many different ideas. What about the end of blind bidding, Mr. Rushforth?
Well, you know what, builders, unfortunately, builders are into that blind building right now, which is kind of scary because, you know, no matter what's going on with the resale market, things are going way over asking. You know, you don't know how high you have to go in order to get this house. But now you actually have to bid on a builder's too. So, I mean, you know, whereas before you could have walked in and said, oh, what's the price of that home? Oh, it's $850,000. Okay, perfect. I'll take it. Now it's like you got to bid for it. So that $850,000 home might be $1 million by the time you're done with it. And it's actually scary that builders have gone that way. Because what it's going to do is it's going to push the prices up even harder now.
But what about on resales?
Well, I mean, you're blind bidding all the time anyways. I know there's talk, apparently.
It's just one of the ideas, but I'm just looking for your opinion. Do you think we should keep it, or should we get rid of blind bidding?
Well, I mean, you're always going to be blind bidding. I don't agree with being able to know what the other offers are. That's, you know, a privacy issue. But, you know, I think it's always going to be this way. There's always going to be blind bidding. Anytime you're in a bidding war, it's always going to be blind. And I know there's talk of that change, but they can't do that. It's they just can't change that. So it's always going to be blind, and it's the way it is. You know, and we've seen situations where, you know, we put a house on the market for, you know, let's say $700,000, and there's six bids on it, and all of them are in the sevens. One's in the low eights, and someone's at 875. Did they overpay by $75,000? Well, they really wanted that property, and there's a reason they paid what they did. So, and that's just the norm in any real estate market. It's been going on for years and years and years. It's just accentuated in this market.
But wouldn't that happen if the bidding was open as well?
Well, it would happen, but I don't think you can make it open. It's just there's privacy issues there. There's one province that does do that. I believe it might be BC or Alberta that they actually have that. I believe, I may be wrong, but excuse me, I don't see it coming here to Ottawa. It's just, I just don't see it.
It's not even Ottawa, right? It's provincial. This is a provincial mandate, so it has to be passed by the Real Estate Council of Ontario, which is, again, it's a government agency. So I don't see it happening. And again, this is coming up now because of what's happening. If the market was reversed and, you know, the buyers didn't have the had the advantage and not the sellers, I don't think the sellers would want it. So depends on which way you look at it. Today, the buyers, and as a purchase, you know, as a consumer, if I'm a buyer, yeah, I'd love to get rid of the blind bidding. But you know, if the foot was on the other side, and you know, as a vendor right now, I like it. But if it was the other way around, it wasn't a seller's market, it was a buyer's market, I wouldn't want it. So either way, you're going to have somebody that's unhappy. But I agree with Paul. I think that, you know, somebody's going to pay for a house what they want to pay for it, and they should have the right. Now, I think Paul will even agree that there's some real estate agents that might, make it, you know, so that they make you feel like there's other offers and you have to increase your offer without knowing what's going on. I think that's really the problem here. It's not the fact that there's a lot of people. It's that there are realtors out there that are trying to do what's best and get the most for their vendors, but the way they're doing it maybe isn't on the up and up.
Yeah, I'd like to say that's not happening, but you're right, Frank. I'm sure it's happening in certain circumstances. I mean, you have to notify everyone how many offers are involved in play. You know, there's, you can't find out what they are, but you do have to legally tell how many offers are in play. but it's, yeah, I think it's the reason all this talk is happening, because, like Frank said, we are going through this crazy real estate market that we haven't seen in eons. And that's why people are talking about slowing down the market, what they can do to slow down the market. But, you know, keep in mind, I think the market will naturally, organically slow itself down when the listings are starting to hit the market, and we're seeing it already. I mean, we went from 1,100 to 1,400 listings on the market over a week. And I think that that's automatically and organically going to slow down this real estate market. Be careful. Remember what happened in Toronto when they brought in all these, you know, golden triangle, or what it was, taxes and foreign taxes, and it really crippled the Toronto real estate market. For quite a while, it crippled it. You don't want to cripple a real estate market. You want to naturally slow it down. And I think with the number of listings that are hitting the market right now, it will naturally slow it down. So
there's even whispers of capital gains. I think that would be political suicide.
They talked about that. I heard about that. That is political suicide. Any party that brings that in, capital gains on your principal residence, they might as well quit right now, because they'll never get back into power. That will never happen. I can promise you that.
I did see one idea that was half decent on the capital gains. And basically what it was is that if you buy a house and you sell it in the first year, then you're subject to a certain percentage of capital gains. If you sell it in the second year, in other words, what they're trying to promote is, if you stay in your home for 3 years or more, then you don't pay capital gains. But if you're doing this to flip houses and make money, then you're going to be subject to capital gains. So,
but that opens up a whole other world of problems. That if you get transferred, you get divorced, things go down, you know, then what happens?
But they might have exceptions in there on scenarios like that. That's the only time you can sell it, is if you got a job transfer or you're going through a marital breakup, right? They can put that in there. But I think what they're trying to stop is, you know, people buying homes and selling it and kind of doing it that way. But I don't know. I mean, I agree. I mean, capital gains is not for your owner-occupied house. And if you want to implement the capital gains, then you better be also opening the door for people to be writing off the interest on their mortgages as well, because you can't have it one way without going the other way as
well. Yeah, and that'll never happen, right?
That'll never happen. And like I said, Frank, I'm already seeing a little bit of a slowdown in the real estate market just by the listings hitting the market. So give it some time. I mean, this is usually the time of the year where listings flood the market, and we're starting to see it already, and it will slow down the market naturally. I don't think we need to go to all these measures to force a slowdown of the real estate market. It will happen.
How many listings do you think we have to get up to slow down the market?
Hey, Paul, let me tell you what else I saw this morning, which, again, you don't see, we're starting to see it, and I agree with you. I mean, it's all part and parcel. Listing came out, my client has been looking for 12 months for a home. Missing out. Finally, she got one this morning, but the offers weren't supposed to be accepted until Monday. But of course, the listing agreement had in there that the vendor has the right to look at offers ahead of time. And she put an offer in. She put it $70,000 over list on the townhouse, and the vendor accepted it, which is, again, I mean, it's a sign that things are changing a little bit.
Yeah, and that's happening. We're accepting a lot of preemptive offers. I mean, if you hit the market and you get that one booming offer that is the seller loves and is going to change their mind on whether to accept offers at a different time, it's happening all the time. And it's that's one way to get into the housing market quick is throw in that bully preemptive offer, and it's happening.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Back with Frank Napolitano, MortgageBrokersOttawa.com, and Paul Rushforth, Real Estate. To Orleans we go, and say hello to Connor. Hello, Connor.
Hi there. I have a question about capital gains. We have our primary residence and a rental property, both in Orleans, and I'm wondering, I know if we sell the rental property, we'd have to pay capital gains. But what if we move into it and then it becomes our primary residence, and then say a year later, then we sell it?
Then you would have two primary residents, you're saying?
Well,
yeah,
then
two primary.
No, like we would move from
you would
our
sell your
we
primary.
Kind of swap.
Would you sell your primary?
No, we would then make that our rental, and then
So here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to get an appraisal on your primary residence that you're currently living in, so that the value is determined based on while you were living in it, what it is. You'll have to get an appraisal on the investment property that you have right now, so that you determine what the value is as of the time that your it's been a rental, and that if you choose to move into it for a year, it doesn't absolve you from paying capital gains. You would still have to pay capital gains, but you wouldn't pay it for that year that you lived in it. But then you're also exposing yourself to the current home you're living in. You're going to have to do another appraisal once you move back in, and you're going to have to pay capital gains on that amount while it's been an investment property. So I think I'm trying to understand what you're trying to do and trying to get away from the capital gains, but you're not going to be
pay
able to.
Capital gains.
Yeah, not going to happen.
No. Okay, so moving around doesn't save you from that.
No. Okay. Frank's 100% right. The only part you're not paying capital gains on is the part where you're living in the property. But while it's been a rental property, and even when you move out of your primary residence now and turn it into a rental property, you will have to pay capital gains on the portion that was the rental period.
Good try, though, Connor.
Yeah. Is there time for another one, or is there someone behind me?
Quickly. No, go ahead, quickly.
Co-signing. So my brother asked me to co-sign for him, and what I'm wondering is, if it's his first home, but it's not mine, can we do the whole 5% down, and it would be his primary residence, but it wouldn't be mine? Is that allowed?
Yes, 5% is okay. You don't have to be a first-time home buyer to buy with 5% down. The only thing is, if you've got a co-sign with them, what will happen is, from a land transfer tax rebate program, where if you're a first-time home buyer, you get a $4,000 rebate. If you're buying it with them, co-signing with them, then your lawyer will likely tell you that he can only get the $2,000 because you're already a home, so you would lose out on that $2,000. A way to avoid it, is if it's possible for you to be a guarantor instead of a co-signer. If you go on as a guarantor instead of a co-signer, then he 100% owns the property, and therefore he can get the land transfer tax. And the other benefit to being a guarantor is that it doesn't become your debt, technically, because you're not signing as a mortgager, as a mortgage borrower. You're just signing as a guarantor. So, but many of the major banks don't allow for the guarantor program. So this is where you speak to a mortgage broker to get that program, because there's three or four lenders that allow it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Connor, you've called into the show a few times, haven't you?
Yeah, over the last couple of years.
Yeah, you were the young guy who was getting into investing and all that, right?
Yeah, now we have two places, and eventually we'll get a third. So
good job, bud. I'm proud of you. That's awesome.
Thanks.
Paul wishes you were his son.
What's that?
Yeah. Hey, Connor, you've made a little bit of money over the last couple of years, eh?
I'm in disbelief.
Yeah.
When I bought my first condo 5 years later, I was happy. When I bought it 5 years ago, 2 years later, I sold it for 10 grand more than I paid for it. And I was like, hey, I made 10 grand. And now I've probably made 300 grand in the last year on both of them.
Yeah, so that's great.
Awesome. Good job. Yeah. Connor.
Thanks, Connor.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
That's wonderful.
Michael Abrams is still listening. And Michael Abrams, thank you very much. Michael just wrote Connor that as a co-signer, you can go on as a 1%, and then the first-time homebuyer gets 99% of the rebate on the land transfer tax.
Oh, nice.
So there you go. Yeah.
You want to repeat that in case Connor missed it?
So if you have to go on as co-signer, you can go on as a 1% owner of the property, and then your brother would get 99% of the land transfer tax rebate.
Hey, listen, just before we're done, I wanted to ask you guys about new construction. Basically, if you're building a home that's about 2,500 square feet, it's going to cost you 30 grand more just in the uptick in lumber. Do you see the...
Oh, that's just lumber. That's just the lumber. There is another uptick in everything else.
Yeah, but that's just lumber. That's what I'm asking. Do you see a slowdown in people buying new construction?
No time soon. And, you know, I remember seeing a builder 8-10 months ago selling homes for what they're selling them for, and I laughed. I said, she'll never sell these homes for that price. That's way overpriced. Those homes are now considered probably $100,000 to $200,000 underpriced now. So
wow.
I don't see a slowdown at all in anything when it comes to the new home builders.
And what do you think we're going to be at for listings next week, Paul?
I would love to see it in the 1,600-1,700 range. So it'd be really nice. I don't think we'll get that high, but I'd love to see it. I'd love to see a little bit more of a balanced market. I mean, I know sellers don't want to hear this, but I know buyers do want to hear this. And we're working with a lot of frustrated buyers because the listings just haven't been there over the last few months. And they're slowly coming back onto the market, which is great.
I think the buyers have paid their dues over the past year.
I think they have. See, yeah.
Birthdays, Frank?
Did you know it's Barb Kramer's daughter's birthday, Casey Kramer, and Maria Cucinato Ranieri celebrating her birthday, as well as my beautiful niece, Nadia D'Arienzo, and Lisa Belanger celebrating her, we'll say, 39th birthday today. Lisa's been with Mortgage Brokers Ottawa since day one, and also congratulations to Lisa, as her and Tony got engaged a couple of weeks ago. So
wow. She's had a busy week.
Excellent.
She has.
I sent Jocelyn and Angie, my two powerhouse teammates, a message before saying this is our 695th show. And Jocelyn responds and said, maybe we should listen to one. So she better be listening to this show.
I love it.
25 times later, she better listen.
I love it. We support local businesses and charities, everyone, especially now with this another lockdown again.
Great.
Yep. Last one, hopefully.
Have a great week, gentlemen.